When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a test. This station is conducting a test of the emergency broadcasting system. This is only a test.
Of all these opinions, this is the one that continues to blindside me, dumbfound me, gobsmack me, thunderstrike me.
Just blasphemy. Absolute blasphemy.
Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
This is the Overreaction Podcast. I am Chase. With me, as always, my man, Cody. You can find us on X at TrophyChaseTFDR and at CodySmithTFDR. We have a fun episode ahead of us here, but we do have some stuff we want to pump because there's a lot of great things going on. So I want to just kick things off here. If you have not heard, Destination Debbie does have a draft guide for the 2024 season. It's going to be data-driven, focusing on fantasy-relevant players. More news to come on that, so do tune in. Huge thing going on with Underdog. Obviously, we've been pumping the DDD code, so if you do go over to Underdog, get your first-time deposit match up to $100. Not only do you get the deposit match, but if you do use code DDD, you get entered into the draft stream giveaways. So you get entered in for all of the signed jerseys, signed cards, Discord access, all sorts of fun stuff that we have going on for giveaways there, roster reviews. But you also get the draft guide itself that we just talked about for free, essentially, just by entering your code DDD. And you get 1 year access to the Destination Devi Discord. So again, code DDD for your first-time deposit on Underdog. And again, make sure you go over to DestinationDevi.com. Check out all of the great things going on over there. We have the Trinity Tracker, so you can really dive in and find out which wide receivers are going to be of interest to you for this upcoming 2024 season. This is the time of year to be using the War Machine, so you can really scout your league, figure out where you're at in terms of roster construction, where you need to be, and maybe there's some things in your leagues that you did not know that were kind of league specific. And obviously go over to patreon.com/allgas to get yourself in. If you are in that Heisman tier or the Destination 5 tier, you will have access to all of the content creators all day, every day. There's AMAs, film sessions, great things like that are going on as well. So additional Patreon content only. Again, patreon.com/allgas. Just talked a lot. Cody, am I missing anything? Anything else you want to talk about here before we dive into our show today?
Incredibly, actually, there is even more that we have to pump up because, like you talk about, that war tool on DestinationDevi.com, it is what I'm currently using because we have a startup coming up this next Sunday that we are doing a live draft stream on. So I'm using that war tool for that. And I'm also listening back to the episode that just dropped yesterday on this feed that you're listening to right now. If you haven't listened back to it for some reason, why are you listening to us? Go back, listen to the Monday show that Scott just did on using war to assess what your flex roster construction should actually be. We've got Shane Says on the YouTube series popping off each and every week as well. We've got Mandic and Chill on the YouTube series, Ty and Ray killing it over there on the YouTube series as well. It is popping off every single day on YouTube, on podcast. We've got different things. If you are in the Discord as well, you get an entirely different feed. So there is stuff each and every single day that is popping up. Ike and Gene on Thursdays as well. Every single day of the week, Destination Devi is giving you content that you can listen to. But now you are here. So let's listen to us and see what we have to dive into on this Tuesday.
Yeah, so we're going to have a fun conversation. You know, we've talked about our win now strategy build. We've looked into some breakdown of the rookie picks and things like that. As we are in peak rookie season and we have rookie drafts coming up, we discussed our rookie draft that actually kicked off and we have officially finished. So that was a fun one to wrap up as our first pre-NFL draft, rookie draft. And then this week we're going to get into another, I'd say, probably one of the most popular draft strategies whenever you're doing, whether it's a snake or an auction startup, and that is what is termed the productive struggle. oftentimes it does not result in a productive struggle. It results in a perpetual struggle or an unproductive struggle or whatever you want to call it. But basically it turns into a scorched earth 5-year rebuild and lots of fun. So we want to talk about how to avoid that, the common mistakes that people do with this, because this is a very viable strategy, but I think we look at it a little different. So we'll dive into some of the nuances of that in just a little bit. But we haven't had a chance to talk about one of the biggest things that hit the news stream in the past week. And that was obviously, we'll quickly hit on Stephon Diggs' trade to the Houston Texans. Just overall recap. Obviously, we know we got the three wide receivers there, CJ Stroud, Joe Mixon, Dalton Schultz. Help me wrap my head around this. What are your thoughts as a Texans fan, and then also as a fantasy analyst, really, where does your allegiance lie right now?
It is very interesting, you know, as we're doing a show about the perpetual struggle, the unproductive struggle. We've kind of seen this with the team that has now traded away Stephon Diggs, because they have perpetually struggled for the entirety of their NFL franchise career in the Buffalo Bills. They have never gotten over the hump, and we thought that this pairing of Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen would be the thing to get them over the hump, to get them even to a Super Bowl again. And they've still never gotten there. And now they're blowing this team up apart again to try to reload, to try to go back into a little bit of a retool, rebuild. And now they're standing over Stephon Diggs to a team that is now on the upswing. I mean, this is basically what Stephon Diggs was brought in to be for Josh Allen. Stephon Diggs is now being brought in again on his third team in his NFL career now to be for CJ Stroud. And now you've got this three-headed monster wide receiver core of Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell. You've also got what you mentioned in Joe Mixon and the tight end of Dalton Schultz as well. This offense looks just stacked across the board. Now you've got some things to fix on the offensive line. You've got some things to fix on the defense, but as far as skill positions alone, this team just feels so great. I'm absolutely stoked as a fan of this team. As soon as my Chinese shop over in over there gets those new jerseys in for $35 a piece, I'm definitely going to be ordering myself a Stephon Diggs jersey, not paying $200 for it. But you know, that's besides the point. We probably don't need to be putting that on blast, but if you want to link and hit me up, I guess we can do that though. And so I absolutely love Stephon Diggs coming in to be a veteran presence. You know, there's a lot of things that's going to be said about him off the field. What does it look like from the locker room standpoint? People are going to have all these conversations, but you're putting it down to a 1-year contract for Stephon Diggs. He has to show out, he has to prove what it is. I'm absolutely stoked as a Houston Texans fan to see Stephon Diggs come in here, be a three for this offense. There's no portion of this offense now that, not a three on the team, but a part of the three. There is no portion that the defense can fully just isolate on without allowing somebody else to excel. And that's where I really think you can really schematically do anything within this offense now, because you have all three layers. You have a quick slot in Tank Dell. You have a Z and an X in Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs. This just puts everything into place as long as these guys can stay healthy this year. I'm absolutely stoked for the team. Now let's get into the fantasy side of it. I don't think it's good for anybody but CJ Stroud. It's not good for Josh Allen. It's not good for any of the three wide receivers on the Houston Texans. It's not good for Dalton Schultz. What part of, do you see any part of this being good for anybody? I mean, if you want to see Curtis Samuel or Mac Hollins as an upgrade out of this, I know Justin Shorter is the massive pickup in waiver wires this week. Don't think that's actually going to happen. I would still see him as maybe the fifth wide receiver option on the Buffalo Bills. But what do you think in your mind of what we're seeing out of this trade?
Oh man, it's interesting, right? Like my heartstrings are right there with Stephon Diggs, but I know he's up there in age. And yes, this is a 1-year contract. They cut it down so that this is his last year on his contract, kind of making him earn it. If he wants to resign, that's an opportunity. Or if he wants to go elsewhere, Nico Collins, also a free agent at the end of the season. So the Houston Texans have some decisions to make long-term. Tank Dell's the only one securely locked in. In terms of, I'm just going to look at the wide receiver room, like, everyone wants to know is you know, is Nico Collins the number one on this team? Is Stephon Diggs going to be the number two? Or, you know, how is this all going to shake out? And I think you're right. I don't think it really matters. You know, CJ Stroud, that team, let's just start there, because he didn't, but the team itself had 592 pass attempts. So basically 600 pass attempts last year. And so now you have three very valid wide receiver options. You have another Dalton Schultz, who historically just year in, year out, gets about 90 targets. You know, so you're taking away 90 targets right there. You have Mixon in the backfield with Damian Pierce. So you still have, you know, a decent backfield. And we know Joe Mixon can catch some passes. So you allocate another 60, 70 targets. Like, I keep breaking this down in a kind of like you would for your, for your season long projections that you're going to do this summer. Because I keep thinking of how the distribution is going to work. If everything kind of, if everyone stays healthy, right? Like, paint that perfect picture. What does it look like? I think it's going to be kind of what we've looked at and kind of discussed a lot, is we're seeing the NFL shift to a little bit more agnostic when it comes to that. It's who's open, who's open on this given play. I think CJ Stroud is very good at finding the open receiver, putting the ball where he needs to put the ball. Doesn't matter if that's Tank Dell, Nico Collins, or now Stephon Diggs or Dalton Schultz. Like, I think he's going to do its best team-wise as far as following the scheme. And I don't think that they're necessarily going to scheme open Nico all the time and Tank Dell all the time. I think we got a bunch of wide receiver twos on our hand, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if anyone's really expecting one of these guys to just emerge as like the 30% target hog, where Nico Collins is going to get 150 to 160 targets, I don't see that for Nico. Like, if anyone was going to be the target hog, I could see it be Diggs. I mean, Nico did what he did last year on 110 targets, which is very efficient. Diggs could be the guy that's like a Keenan Allen, where he gets 140 targets, but is he just going to be that short and intermediate guy in that, you know, PPR formats? That might be great, but that's kind of how I'm looking at this right now. Best ball wise, give me the cheapest of the three. If I had to pick a number one, I'm going to pick Diggs just because of the PPR format, and I'm talking purely fantasy-wise. I don't think he's washed like a lot of people have said, and so if you can get Diggs cheap, I saw Diggs go for a second the other day, straight up second. I'm like, okay, if that's what people are selling Stephon Diggs for, like, sign me up. But if you know me. So,
you want any of them for a second?
Would I buy any of the three wide receivers for a second?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd buy all three of them.
Which is just wild, right? Because it feels like there's no outcome in which they all end up as like top 24 wide receivers, which is where you're probably trying to buy for at least at any second point. Unless CJ Stroud's throwing for like 6,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, which is obviously not going to happen in today's NFL. But it's wild, right? I think they're all going to be good, but kind of to your point, I don't think they're all going to be consistently good. So right. I think I would as well buy any for a second, but there's probably going to be portions of the season where you're going to be pretty disappointed with one of these guys.
But you know for a fact, you can't go buy Nico Collins for a single second. That's just
it. None of them you can, because their ADV is just completely higher than what you could ever possibly get them for. The only one even questionably you could get for a second is Diggs, just because he's going to a team where everybody loves Nico Collins and Tank Dell already,
and he's 30, and so it's like, yeah. this is it for Diggs. He's riding off into the sunset. All right, let's get away from the wide receivers. Everyone's heard about this for a while. The one thing I wanted to touch on before we move on is CJ Stroud, because CJ Stroud has been top four in KTC since the end of the season. Really, he's been locked in there where he's been QB4 right there with Jalen Hurts, and it's been neck and neck. He's gotten bumped up to QB3 right now, and it's really close with him and Patrick Mahomes and even Josh Allen. Like, he's really, really close with them right now. And before I have a couple of CJ Stroud shares, it was actually very hard to find a buyer who still believed, based on what he did last year and what was returning this year, that he was in fact QB4. I was really hard to find some buyers in the leagues that I'm in. And I think that that may have changed a little bit now with Stephon Diggs. So do you think this is a sell window for CJ Stroud because his value can't possibly be any higher, can it?
I think the issue that you're running into is that there's not anybody willing to stake capital on that he's higher than where he was. Now, I think there might be some people who are willing to stake actual meaningful capital that he is actually higher now. Because even if he had this is that artificial dynasty value, that ADV that we talk about on this pod and on this channel a lot. He was number three, but there's a lot of just artificial value baked into him being number three. You couldn't like tack on a second and go down to Joe Burrow typically. Like that typically was not happening. You can't put on a first and go down to Anthony Richardson. That's actually not happening. Even though CJ Stroud is three and Anthony Richardson is nine, there's not actually that much separation between the two players. Now, there might actually be. I haven't really gone into the trades that have happened over the past 24, 48 hours since the trade happened, but I would be very interested to see if now some people are willing to make the bet. I personally would not be. I still don't value him any differently than I would Joe Burrow. I wouldn't pay up on Joe Burrow to go to CJ Stroud. So
12 team start 10, two QB, CJ Stroud or Kyler Murray. And the 103.
Hey, that doesn't even matter for format.
Two QB.
You just tell me it's the 103. That's irregardless. I'm taking it.
CJ Stroud or Brock Purdy. Does that say BJ? Bijan Robinson?
I hope so.
Yeah, there's CJ Stroud for Lamar on the 103. Like some of these are crazy. Some of you guys need to tap into destinationdevy.com and make sure you find yourself some tools or go over to patreon.com/allgas and sign up because holy cow, if you are trading Lamar on the 103 for CJ Stroud, we're here for you. We're here for you. We can help. So let's forget about the trades here. I think that's really what it was. Like, I think before it was like pure artificial dynasty value where there's that hopium of CJ Stroud, quote unquote, taking the next step forward. Now you have a piece that makes people feel like he can take the next step forward. And like, you see that stuff coming to fruition. So I think if you're in a team that you need some additional pieces, this might be your opportunity to tear off and then kind of capitalize by, you know, accumulating some more draft capital or another starter for your team. But what do you got for me here?
I got one more thing. And unfortunately, you know, we got to take up a little bit more time before we get into the actual meat and potatoes of the episode. But the other portion of this is Josh Allen has actually fallen behind Patrick Mahomes in KTC value. And if I can trade my Josh Allen, or I can trade my Patrick Mahomes for Josh Allen, by all means. I do not even need a plus. I would do it straight up right now. I don't care that he doesn't have Stephon Diggs anymore. He has been the wide receiver, or he has been the quarterback one or the quarterback two for 5 years straight. That's not even points per game. That is over the course of a season, which is almost near impossible to do. And he has been the quarterback one or quarterback two in almost every single format of scoring. It's incredible what this guy has done, and I do not care that he has lost a wide receiver one. I will keep betting on Josh Allen to be a quarterback one or quarterback two as long as he is there.
So here's the thing, and I know we do want to get into the actual strategy of this, but this has not really been talked about. I haven't heard anyone really talk about this. But Josh Allen, I mean, everyone said when Stephon Diggs came over, it's like, oh yes, this is that wide receiver that's going to help complete things for Josh Allen. And it did. I mean, it definitely took him to another level. He's going to be missing Gabe Davis. He's going to be missing Stephon Diggs. Like, this is going to be an all new receiving course. I feel like this is going to be a brand new offense as a whole, because you can't just replace Stephon Diggs. I know, unless they make a big move up in the draft, or if they hit on their receivers that they do take, because they have to add something, right? Like, it feels like they're taking they're looking at the Kansas City Chiefs. They're like, hey, we got a stud quarterback. You guys got a stud quarterback. They didn't have any wide receivers. We don't need any wide receivers. Like, we can make this work too. It's a very interesting game here. And I do think that Josh Allen is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. No doubt about it. Not only for NFL purposes, but for fantasy as well. But are you not a little concerned about Josh Allen this upcoming season? Like, not even a little?
Not in the slightest. Whenever he still put up 524 rushing yards with 15 touchdowns this year. And his average over the last 3 years has been more around 700 yards and 8 touchdowns or 9 touchdowns over the first 5 years of his career. No, as long as he has that rushing floor, I am not worried about Josh Allen. And you know what's going to probably happen more whenever he doesn't have a number one wide receiver? Probably going to rush a little bit more. And I've seen nothing of the ilk to say that Josh Allen has even gotten close to a cliff. So, no, I have nothing but upside for Josh Allen, and I have no reason to say that he will not be a top three quarterback again on the season, barring devastating injury that I would never wish on anybody, much less my favorite quarterback in the league.
I'm with you. I'm not really concerned, but I'm just being honest. There's just, as we've talked about this the past 2 minutes, there's a pit in my stomach. There's just something that feels a little off. But
he'll make Curtis Samuel and Mac Hollins be 1,000-yard wide receivers because he's that good.
Let's go. All right. So that kind of recaps, again, everything that's going on at Destination Devi trade. We do want to get into some startup stuff just to kind of continue what we had chatted about a couple of weeks back. This one is going to be the unproductive struggle, or productive struggle, as everyone loves to call it. And I just kind of want to start here. Like, obviously, no matter what you do, whenever you're doing a startup, whether that's an auction or a snake draft or lineup league, but know your settings, know how many starters you have, know what your scoring is. Again, go over to destinationdevi.com, get yourself on in the war machine, find out what the war is telling you and how it's allocated across, so that you can kind of figure out if you have an advantage anywhere. But know your league mates, all of that fun stuff, as always said. You know, we're going to operate for this conversation, as always, 12-team, start 11, full PPR with a 1.75 tight end premium. That's just what we do, super flex, of course. And so we can always adjust the conversation for best ball lineup. We can adjust the conversation for more starters, less starters, et cetera, as we go through this. But let's just start off with, like, the common mistakes, because I feel like this is something where everyone's like, oh, yeah, productive struggle, get young players, right? Duh. Like, that's all we have to do, right? It's simple, right, Cody?
And normally, you know, you would think that these young players will eventually age and mature into, and they'll get 20% better over their first 3 years, and then they'll eventually grow in to be your Justin Jeffersons, your Jamar Chases. You'll hit on a Bijan Robinson. You'll hit on a Jahmyr Gibbs. You'll hit on the next CJ Stroud, you'll hit on the next quarterback prospect that eventually vaults you up into a difference-making range. But the theory of it becomes, typically, you only have about a 50% hit rate on any of your first-round picks to actually become difference-making players. And you know what happens whenever you only hit on about 50% of your picks? You start throwing them back into the pool because you need something better again. And you need something better again just to get yourself up to the level that other people are already at. Whenever, especially, this is the conversation off of what we've been talking about 2 weeks ago of these wide receivers that have been just elite for the last 4 years. How do you get any rookie wide receiver unless you only hit the two of Jamar, or I guess you hit three. Jamar Chase, CeeDee Lamb, or Justin Jefferson. If you hit those three, I guess you could maybe get there. But me and my team that's been rocking Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, it's been rocking Keenan Allen, it's been rocking Stephon Diggs for the last 4 years, you've never even gotten close to me. And so all that you have to do, like, the only option that you have is just to either keep down tiering it or keep throwing it back into more rookie picks, and you sit in this productive struggle, you sit in this perpetual struggle, as we like to call it, where you just don't have any avenue to actually get to contention anymore. And so, like, obviously we're going to talk about this for the rest of the pod, but this is not the process that we like to play predominantly. But it does have a little bit more validity now that we're in this new age where we don't have our win now avenue that we t- typically like to play in. So, but we definitely don't want to play it exactly as it's normally been played in a productive struggle aspect. There's a lot of tweaks and a little bit of nuance and a little bit of differences that I think we can put onto that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you hit home on a few good points there, and that's kind of what I want to dive into right away. As you talked about the rolling over of rookie picks, right? Where you have, maybe you in the startup, you made some trades, right? You made some trades and now you own 7 of 12 first round picks, and you just wait it out till next draft and you want to make those picks and hope you hit on all of them. You get 3 good players, one's maybe elite, and you sacrifice not only the startup for year one, you're sacrificing the following year because those guys aren't, your team isn't ready. And then you just re-roll it into the following draft, as you mentioned. The problem is a couple of things here. It starts with the trades you make to acquire those rookie picks, but it also goes down into the fact that you're actually just making rookie picks. I love rookies too. You can add some young guys to your roster, but you don't have to make your rookie picks. You can, like, the whole idea here is to take these assets and maximize them when they have peak value so that you can continuously build your team. So again, I got kind of going off on the rails here, but I do want to start back with the startup itself. And when you first really start making these moves, how do you like to trade in a startup to even accumulate picks? Because, like, we do this we do the productive struggle differently. The idea here is a 1 year, 2 years tops, but 1 year where you just eat it. And then the whole idea is year two is you're contending, or you have a good enough team that you may not be the true number one, but you're contending. You're in the playoffs. So how does this start for you as you're going through, let's just say, a snake draft?
Yeah, let me go off on a little bit of my own tangent as we're talking about this. I apologize that it's going to get a little bit off the rails. But so whenever Productive Struggle, I believe, was right around the time that I was beginning Dynasty, and I never agreed with it from the start, and I think wholeheartedly that it really hasn't helped teams who really went into this build. The reason that I think it is because I think people, whenever they were first going into it, were truly playing what we know as Dynasty. And the issue that I think that we have now is that it's such a short window game now because everybody has content. They have everything at their fingertips all the time, is that you really can't build true dynasties in Dynasty Fantasy Football. It's a misnomer because it isn't really Dynasty Fantasy Football, because whenever you were trying to build this Productive Struggle, you were trying to build a dynasty that would last you for 5 years because you were trying to hit on all of these young prospects to just go and compete for the next 5 year window in a row. Well, that doesn't really happen anymore because the prospects change and the values change so rapidly. You can't do that because the fluctuation is so high. So if you can't do that, there's no window to try to compete for the next 5 years. You have to play within a much smaller window, and you can't really go through a, hey, let me just tank for the next 3 years and I'll come out on the other side so much better. The windows are so much smaller that you can't even do that. And so I think that the entire Dynasty name is just a misnomer, because we really play this, as I like to call it, franchise mode, more so, where you're just playing in a year-to-year window with the assets that you have. And you really, like you said, you should really be coming out of a rebuild within 1 year. Like, and if you're coming out of a rebuild more than 1 year, I mean, you have a god-awful team and you should actually probably just burn it to the ground. But where we like to really do this is really just build around some, like, core assets. It depends a little bit what your starter range is, how many starters you have. But what I really like to do on these teams, where maybe it's a failed contender, because, you know, we normally build win now teams, and we've started to see some of those teams fall off. But let's tear it down and then build around, like, 3 or 4 or 5 core assets, and then build it up around there. Because if we throw everything into the pool, now we're relying on such a small hit rate just within rookie picks to try to build it back up. I would much rather have a core to build it around and just not, I don't, even worry about being the worst team in the league just to get a 101. I'd much rather be the 103, but still have a large core of assets to build around.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I think that's the way we want to do it. Not only when we rebuild or you know tear down a team, but also when we're going through these startups. Because again, this is essentially what you're doing is a rebuild right off the rip. That's the thought process here. You're just trying to jumpstart it because you know what you're doing. You can kind of angle. You can make those picks in the draft. So like, let's just look at it from a snake startup perspective. How do we do that? Like, are you passing intentionally on the Christian McCaffreys, the Tyreek Hills? Are you going after, you know, some of these younger players? Like, how are you building the value? And then when it comes to trades in a snake startup in particular, what kind of trades are you looking at? Because that's what I want to get into here, because I think that's where people ruin their team and get stuck in this perpetual rebuild, is when they make poor trades right off the rip before they've even drafted five players.
And so I'll start off from the beginning here, because what the biggest problem that I see a lot of people doing is QB youth. Why in the world, in a position that lasts until about age 38, do I care about having somebody that's 21 coming into the league? Does not mean a goddamn thing to me until they're about 35 years old, what a QB age is. I do not care. I can take Dak Prescott right now and value him the same as Tua Tagovailoa in terms of age difference. Does not matter to me. I could even value him the same as Caleb Williams. I actually do pretty much value him the same as Caleb Williams. Age doesn't matter to me with that player. The only thing that matters a little bit is just like, what does the contract look like beyond this year, which Caleb Williams obviously has for the next five, being a first-round draft pick.
League sentiment too, you know.
And obviously, like, all those things matter, but what I don't want to do is just sit here and actually value a youth build at quarterback, because there's so much unknown whenever you go to a youth value a quarterback, especially like I would much rather have some guys. I'd much rather have like a Brock Purdy that I know, unless he falls off this year, is going to get a 5-year contract probably at the end of this year. So like I really rather de-risk myself in terms of the quarterback position. In terms of trade value and where I'd actually like to go, I think a lot of people try to trade up for those high valued picks. I mean, a lot of people, if you're just going into a snake startup and you have your rookies in there, may try to go up and draft a Marvin Harrison, may try to go up and draft a Malik Nabers. You know what I would rather do? Just draft AJ Brown. It may not be the upside that everybody else has, but you know what? AJ Brown has been a top six wide receiver for about the last 3 years, and I'd much rather take some security in that than I would anybody else. And so like that's where I'd rather build. I think a lot of people try to get into this. I'm just going to build so much youth in the early rounds, especially, that they just take on so much risk within their teams that I think you would rather just at least take some security. I'm okay taking one or two of those players in those first like four rounds, but at least get some security around your team to where you're not just floundering if everything falls apart and you don't take the right rookies or the right sophomore players going into year two.
Yeah, I think, and this is where I'm looking early in the draft, right? Again, taking it from the very beginning, I am purely drafting. I want points and value, which is why when you bring up a guy like AJ Brown, he's still youngish. You know, he's not 22, but he's not 30. And so he still has a couple years of his quote unquote fantasy prime where he's not going to get devalued because he's, you know, an injury away from being dead. AJ Brown's one of those guys that is a top six performer and still has top six dynasty wide receiver value. So all for that. Quarterback, I'm right there with you. I would much rather go after the Joe Burrows, the Justin Herberts, even though his name isn't necessarily the sexy one this year, over a guy like Caleb. So I'm happy to pick something else around that range. So I think what I'm looking at here is, depending on where you're drafting at, is where you'd start to look at trade backs and trying to still stay in a range where you can accumulate a Herbert, or maybe, again, you mentioned Dak Prescott. There's still Kyler Murray out there. I know T-Law's name isn't again, another pretty one right now, but all of these quarterbacks in this range are still going to have immense value, but they're going to be putting up points for your fantasy team. Even if you're not trying to win, that does not mean get 0 points. That does not mean be the absolute worst team, as you mentioned. Like, you can still have points on your roster as long as you're building in the direction you want to go. I'm avoiding those aging players. That's really how I'm looking at it. If I'm in a range where I'm starting to look at, you know, forget the Tyreeks, but, you know, the Stephon Diggs, the Deebo Samuels, the Devontae Adams, right there in like that 6th, 7th round, like, those are the ones that I'm like, hey, who wants to come get some points? Who wants to, like, I'll trade back. Can you throw me a second? And I think that's the big thing when it comes to the trades that I wanted to talk about is one of the common mistakes people make is I'm going to trade you my 5th round pick for a 21 or 25 first next year. And yes, it's a 1-for-1, but when you're actually in a startup, not only are you losing the startup value right now, but you're just pushing it into next year, hoping that whatever is available right there is basically a 1-for-1 swap for 2025. I'm looking to trade back where I could still get a player in the draft, but then also accumulate that first if possible, or a second, and just continue to accumulate assets so that I have something to work with. And I'm not depleting my roster completely currently. And that's a lot of times what you see is you see someone goes out there, they take Joe Burrow 1st round. They take AJ Brown in the 2nd round. They're going to go out there and take, you know, Brock Bowers, or sorry, not Brock Bowers, but they'll take Trey McBride in the 3rd. So you got 3 nice core pieces. They're going to trade their 4th, 5th, 6th, and they're just going to trade into the 25 class and just try and get some additional 1st and 2nds. And that's where we talked about the rookie picks earlier. That is immediately where you absolutely kill your team. Even though you have 3 core pieces and it sounds really cool to have those 3, you got Burrow, you got AJ Brown, you got Trey McBride, but you pass and miss on everything, all of the value in rounds 4 through 7. You miss out on all of those good players, all of those young players in this class, anything and everything that's there that could not only be a trade asset for you, but also could be points for your team or a key piece that you're building around. And that's what I think people miss on is they trade out like that versus trading back and getting picks.
So I just have to ask, just play out this exercise. What was the, if you remember, what was the player that you actually said that we were trading up for in that 25 first trade, where we were trading up for that? I believe might have been like a Stephon Diggs or a Tank Dell or a Zay Flowers or Rasheed Rice, one of those young pieces that you would send your 25 first for. Not a Stephon Diggs, I guess, but if you were actually in that young perpetual, like in that young rebuilding win. Range. Yeah. And you wanted to trade, you saw this player slip and you were just like, you have to trade up for this 25 first to go get that guy. Well, if you're looking at this range, okay, so let's say it's the Brandon Ayuk, Romo Dunze, Waddle, Rice, T. Higgins, Tank Dell, Zay Flowers. On the other side of it, you know what you're probably giving up as well? You're probably giving up like a 9th round pick or something like that. Whenever we get back there, it doesn't even get all that much different to me, because even if I wanted to, what I would normally do is go Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley, all these guys that are older producing veterans, but you can also still get Hollywood, Christian Watson. You can get Deontay Johnson, who still has a good amount of years in the league. Josh Downs, Jerry Jeudy, Romeo, like all God, of these man. Guys yeah. that are like, what the range that you're getting into still isn't even difference making. You're still in the flat range of wide receiver all the way down to wide receiver. I mean, we're in the 12th round here that I'm talking about right now in terms of just snake ADP, in terms of dynasty daddy ADP. Like, why are you giving your first to go up and get that? It doesn't make sense to me. And so, and then you're just hamstringing yourself because you're already putting on the fact that you're trying to make a probably team that is going to not really do well this year. And then you're trading up again to try to, nothing makes sense with it, right?
I mean, there's the trade up factor, but like that's what people will do. And I'm not saying that, again, when you're doing the productive struggle, those are the trades you're looking for. You're looking for, okay, you want to come get Tank Dell here at the 503 or Zay Flowers at the 506. And we're looking at, you know, current Dynasty Daddy ADP based on actual drafts that have happened. Like, that's currently where they're going. So you're like, okay, fine. You know, give me your 9th round pick and your 25 first. Can you get that done? Is that a deal that you can go get done where you're not losing an asset this year, where you're going and you're like, yeah, I'll take the 10-03, which is Deontay Johnson, Tank Dell for Deontay Johnson and a 25 first. It's like, if you can get those types of deals done as you're trading back, that's what you want to do. That's, and again, Deontay Johnson isn't necessarily the sexy name. He's a good NFL player. And as you mentioned, he's in that flat tier still. He's still just one of those guys who could jump up into to be a maybe a top 36 guy. But in the end, you don't really care for your team. It's a guy that could increase in value that you could use and trade later. He's a starter for the time being, but you accumulated a 25 first without having to truly sacrifice your entire roster. You went from Tank Dell to Deontay Johnson. You plan to lose this year anyways, but you got a 25 first, and now you have an additional asset. I think those are the things that I'm looking at, not necessarily trading up to do that, but to trade back and find those ways to get additional picks. Even trading out of the six, like 6 to 9, can you go get yourself an additional second? Can you like find those ranges and know your tiers too? When you're looking at some of this ADP, like know that the fifth round is really like the end of the fifth is where a lot of these guys, or I guess even the sixth now, like the sixth round is really where you have Addison and JSN and DK Metcalf, George Pickens. You still have some good names that people are very interested in. That's a tier. And then you're going to have like your aging guys with McLaurin and Evans and Adams. And like, you're going to have these different tiers. So really look at the ADP and know these tiers that you want to move out of or into. And so you're moving from Addison and you're moving into Amari Cooper. That's three rounds difference, but you're accumulating value for your team. And I think that's where, how we look to do this is, you're still building a team, but you're accumulating that additional value. So you're not sacrificing just the right now, right? Like that's the thing, is everyone sacrifices right now and you have five players on your team and it looks disgusting.
I guess to that point, maybe like what I don't want to do here is just go, all right, let me just go through my fourth through ninth rounds going Tank Dell, Brian Thomas. Let's go Xavier Worthy. Let's go Troy Franklin. Right. Let's go Christian Watson. Like, that's not what I wanted. Like, there's so much just hopium that has to hit for that wide receiver room. You know what I would rather do? Is just let's take two shots. Let's take three shots. But then let's backfill it with kind of the guys that we're talking about. Let's maybe fill it with a George Pickens, who we know serves his role at least with what it is, but still has a little bit of upside. Let's put in a Christian Kirk, just to give me a little bit of stability, but he's still young enough that he's still going to give me like 4 years of what he is, right? And so I even if we're leaning into this younger side build, I want at least a little bit of stability to build around. Yeah. Just because, like, if it doesn't work out and I don't hit on every single prospect that's only maybe even a 50% hit rate, if we're really, really good, it's a 50% hit rate. More than likely, it's about a 40% hit rate. And so you need a little bit of just security to build this thing around. Otherwise, all that you're going to do is tank it into the bottom, and you're probably not even going to have enough assets to trade off to get more picks to reimburse yourself with. The only other thing that I might say is, like, unless you're in a dispersal league is where we're trying to go off of this, is where if you're in the dispersal league, you might have a little bit more viability to really try to do a little bit more, to take more risk if you're in that dispersal league, because you can just throw your team back in. If it doesn't really hit, then you can throw it back in, you know, right? And then you can middle yourself out again. But what you don't want to do is just try to be on the edges again within that dispersal league, which is where I think some people try to play the edges again, and it doesn't really work out again, and then you just have to throw yourself back into the dispersal league again. And typically you're paying a tax if you're trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it hit the nail right on the head there. I mean, I think this rant that we have both just went on comes down to what you said earlier, is establish a core of proven talent that also has dynasty value. Could be artificial dynasty value, but has dynasty value, so that you not only are potentially getting points, but you're also getting the trade asset that could be some of these names, right? Again, you don't want to rely just on rookies. unless you have a league that you know you can trade those players in before they set foot on the field. Honestly, this is pre-NFL draft, but like before we even know landing spots, some of these guys we're going to see value completely nuked. We're going to see guys skyrocket. And if you swing and miss on those prior to them even stepping on the field, your team's going to look so different than it would today. So building around a core, establishing that core of young talent so that you can continuously build, making the right trades so that you can still draft a player, but accumulate 25 picks or accumulate picks for future years so that you have trade assets to continuously build your team. And then being able to take shots on again, maybe they don't have the upside. Christian Kirk, very good player. Maybe he doesn't have like the massive upside of what we would hope, but he's still a very good quality young player. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with having quality starters, especially if you are in deeper leagues. If you're in, we always play and start 11 typically, or 11 or more. If you're in 11, 12, 13, like you can do some damage. You can do some real damage with the Christian Kirks and the Deontay Johnsons and the Chris Godwin and that whole range, which is like round 8, 9, and 10. You just got three wide receivers in round 8, 9, and 10, and you probably have, you know, a really decent shot of either a trade asset or still building something that's a relative, I don't say contender, but competitive team. You might still be in the losing half, but you at least have some competitive players that you have some trade value with, or you can still keep them on your roster as back end fillers for your roster.
And the beautiful thing about that too is like, I feel like everybody feels this need to have just this dominant team all the way through the year. And truthfully, if we look at most leagues, it's really not the case, because truthfully, all that you need to do is just get to the playoffs, be a top six team, and then you're playing on a 3-week variance, right? Like whenever you see, I mean, what was it 2 years ago? Whenever all of the top end quarterbacks went out, it was Lamar went out, Burrow went out, Allen went out. Everybody went out, and then you're relying on freaking Jared Goff to be your quarterback one. You're relying on Christian Kirk to be your wide receiver two. Like, there's a lot of variance that still happens in this game that we can never predict. And so if you just have the, like, even if you're playing on a middling team, like, you really don't have to have this absolute, just like I said earlier, this dynasty that wins leagues anymore. That really doesn't happen for the most part, because you know what happens to most dynasty leagues that turn into a true dynasty? They fold, because they all know that that team is going to run the league for the next couple of years and nobody wants to play in that league anymore. So whenever you're doing this rebuild, I do think that you just need to build a little bit more. Let's build a little bit more security. And if you do build that way, it also allows you to do a little bit more of, hey, let's take some more upside swings. Like, because we're obviously going to build around a core, we want to ship off all of the rest of the picks that we have on this roster. Okay, so if we get somebody who turns into a first-round wide receiver, okay, we can ship him off, and we can ship him off for some future value. Whenever that pick comes around, we can actually use that pick for some more upside value. Let's put that into a quarterback position, maybe, that can actually put our roster into a different range of outcomes. This year would be the perfect example of it. If you were actually able to put some assets into this year, your top six picks in this year are worth tons within the dynasty market. Yeah. And so, like, if you could cheer back off of one of those picks, if you just stockpiled all these 24 firsts and you could actually just tier off of all of these players, you can build a legitimate contender right now if you just built for this year. And so that's what I want. That's what I want to preach to people, is just like, hey, look, like, don't build it for this year. If you want to actually do this process, let's build it for years into the future and around a core that you've already built. But let's not put all of the eggs in our basket into one of these rookie classes that has a 50% hit rate. Let's not do that. Let's just push that value out and just keep pushing it out. And then once we actually see that value accumulate within the dynasty market, then capitalize on it.
Yep. And as you mentioned, if you have the right core of talent, no matter how you construct the rest of your team, worst case scenario, you have the fallback plan of your core. Because week one, you might roll in and you're like, all right, let's see what happens. Let's see if this team can actually make something happen, you know, make some moves. but you have all this additional capital that you've accumulated for 25 already. So you have tradable assets that, let's say you're not as bad as you thought. You are, maybe you're right in the middle. You're seventh place. You're out of the playoff picture currently, but you got two firsts. One of them's your own. Another one's like a mid-playoff first as well. You got 3 seconds. Like, think of what you can do with those types of players if you make the right moves in the start. But it all starts there. And I think that's just the big thing I want to hammer home, is making sure that you have like the ability to maneuver appropriately within your draft, not banking just on the rookies, and then also not trading one for one a startup pick for a future rookie pick. That's just a big no-no. Even if they're like, oh yeah, I'll give you my ninth round pick, I'm like, it might make me feel like, sure, but at the same time, I'd much rather just trade back and add a second and do some moves like that in order to accumulate value on my team.
That is where I certainly will not use any trade, any startup trade calculator. No, I will not use that. Literally, just if you want a startup trade calculator, just put the players and pick side by side. Substitute whatever ADP is. Put like a range of three players on either side of what the pick is, and the other player, whatever that is. Just put about three different players and substitute them, whatever it is, to put them against each other, and you will immediately see that most of these trades that involve a trade back from like the fifth to the ninth, and I get a player, they're typically god awful, because it's about the same. that flat range of wide receiver is the most exploitable range within that, where I'm getting a flat range wide receiver back and I'm getting a 25 first on top of it, because I'm letting you pick the one that you won in the fifth and I'll just pick another one in the ninth. That's typically how those deals go, and they're typically heavily, heavily slanted in the range of the person who is getting the tier back within those picks.
I'd say it's the most exploitable thing in startup snake drafts, and because snakes, that's just where it's at. I do want to shift this, because we have talked a ton about, you know, snakes specifically, and get into more of really where we love to draft, and that's auction. So how does this differ? I mean, obviously, still the core remains the same. You can, this now you have everyone at your disposal, right? Like, you can kind of hand pick your core. Do you? Because I have something in mind personally, but like, do you have anything in mind when it comes to how you want your core to look? Do you want it to be a top six quarterback, and then maybe a top wide receiver, you know, young wide receiver, maybe a Puka or a CD Lamb? Like, how do you strategically build when it's an auction startup versus snake?
If I'm going to go into what I would call a truly productive struggle, I think that is where I would sit. I would want a high tier quarterback. I'd want a high tier wide receiver. And those would be kind of like my core pieces that I would build around. I'd want a couple others, obviously, in the middle range, like that Christian Kirk, like the Chris Godwin, like the Deontay Johnson, really just give my roster a little bit of stability that I know that I can rely on for a little bit of a couple of years. But from there, then I'm okay leaning into, especially if we're doing this as a pre-NFL draft, then I'm okay leaning into a couple of more so the pick avenue. Because I know that I have my core. I can take upside shot swings. And if they don't work, you know what I'm going to have is a pretty high draft pick next year. And I'm going to have a lot of other picks that I can probably, or a lot of other players that I can probably re-roll into picks next year as well. So I'd like to have a little bit of the core built out that way. Probably a hammer at wide receiver, probably hammer at quarterback. And then I can build out the rest from there. I'll probably punt my running back and tight end. Maybe I try to lean into a young, youthful tight end like a McBride or a Laporta, something like that, and I put about 400-500% of my assets into that. Other than that, though, I think I'd probably lean a little bit more into upside shots, youth, draft picks, whatever that is.
Yeah, I look at it as, especially when it comes to the auction, like the you and I always talk about this, and this is a big thing with, you know, you have your par sheet that you look at certain things, but you also talk about drafting value. You know, how many firsts is my team worth? Kind of conversation, right? Like, how many firsts in value can I, if I just completely melted this team into liquid assets, how many firsts could I get? Obviously, we don't want to do that. Let me preface that. But I want assets that people want. That's kind of how I'm going to look at it, is I want assets that people want. So if I go after a, you know, CeeDee Lamb, a Puka, you know, get yourself a DJ Moore, get yourself a few of those higher end assets that you can pivot off of. We've talked about this all the time. The team that you draft is not the team that you start week one with. But if I can find some players that have some value that I can move off of potentially, again, DJ Moore is the one I'm looking at, not necessarily like by Puka or CeeDee, because I do want to keep my core intact. But if I'm able to move some of those guys around and accumulate value, like, that's what I'm looking to do. Again, exploiting the flat range of wide receiver. In auction, I'm also more willing to go after running back. But I'm only going after a specific couple names of running back, just because they're the cheaper. Like, if you're looking at the actual dollars you're going to spend, you're probably going to spend 8 to 10% of your budget on maybe a Bijan or a Brees, Gibbs. I don't know if I could do it with Achane. Yeah, I still believe in him.
That number's gone up.
Is it going up now?
From drafts this year, it's about 12 to 15%. Okay. Like, they are actually going up in about the 12.5% range.
I'm still going to try it, depending on my league. Again, knowing who I'm playing with will change that for sure. But if I can get it right around that 10%, I'd be comfortable in accumulating, you know, in getting one of those core 3 to 4 running backs, if I can. If I can't, then I'm happy to pivot right back to wide receiver, or again, young tight end, Dalton Kincaid, someone that has an opportunity here this upcoming year to truly make a mark. This way I have, again, young, solid assets, and then I can look at making pivots within those tiers if I need to.
Do fully agree with that. I will say the only thing that, and I kind of want to just lean into a little bit more of that, like, high variance, right?
Take your shots.
Once I have that, like, core three or so, especially if it's a little bit shallower of a lineup, you know, like, most of our auctions are best ball, so it doesn't really apply to this one. But whenever we're in those, like, shallow ones, like, let me get my three, and then I'm fine just taking. If it's 10 less, then let me just actually take my shots. And so I will lean a little bit more into that youthful side, into a little bit more of the, what does this player become? Let me lean into the Marvin Harrison. Let me lean into the Malik Nabers, Romo Odunze. Let me lean into the rookie running backs, and I'll just make all those picks, because it doesn't take much for me to fill out the rest of that lineup. And I know that's a little bit away from what we were just talking about with that, like, with the auction and the, with the best ball lineups. But I do believe whenever you're starting to talk about the smaller and shallower lineups, I think that's probably where I start to actually flip the bill and go, really, okay, well, let's just take all of these shots and see, because I don't have to hit that many to fill out the rest of my lineup.
As we're talking this through, I mean, I hesitate bringing this up, but it's kind of, I'm more comfortable studs and duds approach is like how my perspective would be, where I'm more willing to spend up for those high value assets that I can, again, rely on, but then backfilling with rookie running backs, those second round wide receivers, like guys that, like, yeah, I'm definitely taking shots. I'm definitely going to swing and miss, but can I hit on some of them? Can some of those guys end up in good situations? You know, those types of players. And again, you mentioned, like, Christian Kirk, I think, is one that is kind of being slept on this year, where he's still valued in the eighth round. You know, I'm looking purely at startup snake that in that aspect, but he's valued where he is in that flat tier. But he's kind of the wide receiver one on that team. Like,
And I brought him up because I just got sniped on him in a mock startup snake draft where I thought I was going to have him at the 802, and I got sniped on him at the 801.
There you go. There you go.
Was really excited, and I was like, nah, he's not going to be taken. I'll take Najee Harris at the 7-11. I'll be perfectly fine to take Christian Kirk on the backside. Instead, got Chris Godwin.
There you go. See?
It's not horrible, but I'd still rather have Christian Kirk.
Again, upside shot. Like, we know what we're getting with that situation. So, anything we want to add here? I mean, I think that's the big thing is just – don't make the mistake of truly sacrificing your team in the startup auction or startup auction or in the snake draft where you're trading away pieces for future firsts and thinking it's going to be fine. Like, don't sacrifice that. Build around a core. Find your spots to take some upside swings. Anything else you want to add? Anything else you want to think, you know, discuss right now?
And even if you're only trading back for future first, like, you need to have a plan to use those, yes. Right? Like, you don't just want to trade back for all these future first, have nothing on your team, and then make all the picks, because that's basically the same as going into the rookie draft and taking all of the rookies in that year. Like, there's pretty much no difference between the two outcomes, right? You're still working on that low outcome hit rate, although it could be exponentially good. It could also exponentially be bad. And as you're playing on the variance, typically your team doesn't fault itself into a range that's actually competing. So we typically don't like to play this way of the what we like to kind of, you know, tongue in cheek call the perpetual rebuild, the unproductive struggle. We don't really like to play this way, and we really like to tweak it a little bit more into this retool mode. And obviously, if you can take your team all the way down to a 101 in a class that matters, by all means, I can fully get behind that. But we see, even in this class that we're talking about right now, what can you actually get to tier down from a 101 to a 106 in this class? Because I don't think it's that much. Well, I guess second? I don't think anybody's giving up a future first to tier from the 101 to the 106 in a Superflex league right now. Because what's the difference between all these prospects? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. There's three quarterbacks. There's three wide receivers that I think people are mostly okay with. We'll see what it comes to post NFL draft, but nobody really knows. And if you could just sit there with so many more assets on your team and take the 106 instead of the 101 and be so much better situated for the future. And the only difference is you have a 101 to a 106. I'd much rather have that 106 and just have about six or seven assets still on my team. So I think what we're talking about here is just like, understand what the classes are coming up in the future. Understand where your potential team is at. Understand what the capital you have on your team is. And I would not lean into specifically burning teams to the ground just to get to the 101 and burning everything, or starting a draft from the startup and saying the only thing that I'm going to bet my future on is unknown rookie prospects or unknown sophomore prospects. Like, that's not the way that I'm ever going to really build the team, because I think historically it's just never really worked out to fruition, other than revisionist history saying I picked all of the right pieces and I hit on a
the 19th round of my startup.
I hit on a 1% outcome and finally got there out of my 100 leagues that I finally did a startup in, and I hit it and now I can run a dynasty league. It normally doesn't happen that way.
And that's why I think, like, there's absolutely a right and a wrong way to do this strategy. That's why we wanted to kind of bring this up. We talked around a little bit, you know, that was kind of the thought process here. We just kind of wanted to bounce around, think tank this. And that is truly what it comes down to. Like, you can go into a startup. If you find the right trade partners, this can work out beautifully for you. If you can't find trade partners and you have to make the picks and you're just sitting there making pick after pick after pick, especially in a snake, you're making, this is just not the strategy I want to take. Just totally honest, not the strategy I want to take. If I can't find trade partners and I can't make those types of moves where I'm moving back and accumulating assets, I'm not doing this because I am going to be forced to at that point take, yeah, I can still build my core early, but I'm also going to be forced to at some point in the middle rounds, take my shots on Brian Thomas, take my shots on some of these rookies where I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I want to do. Otherwise you're going to be tearing off of your key pieces. So it's like, that's where this strategy, I think, is only a very specific scenario. If you find the right trade partners or in an auction, you happen to get the right values on certain players. I feel like you want to talk about the win now build dying. I feel like this build is dying just because everyone goes into a startup. I see four or five people that go into a startup thinking that they're going to do a productive struggle, and it painfully ends for like three or four of them.
I will say the only thing to that right now is, what else are you buying? You know, like everything, at least in the wide receiver market, is pretty much slanted towards youth, because those are the only thing, like to our episode 2 weeks ago, that's the only thing that's actually producing at this elite wide receiver level. And so I'm very interested to see how this type of like productive struggle strategy can potentially correlate with the new age dynasty market that we see, especially in the market that is at the forefront right now, which is wide receiver. How can it correlate, and can you get enough pieces within that market to actually build a productive struggle wide receiver room? I don't know. I mean, maybe if you do, normally people don't build it this way, but maybe if you could build it within, okay, let's get three young wide receivers. I mean, let's try to really go into it. Let's get the Jamar Chase, let's get Amon-Ra St. Brown, and then let's trade up and get AJ Brown. And then we're going to productive struggle the rest of the team. Say we're going to get back end quarterback twos, we're going to get back end running backs off the waiver wire, we're going to get replacement level tight ends. Could you actually build the room that actually competes pretty easily through that range? Because all of those positions that we're talking about, it feels replaceable, right? I don't know. I think that's the next iteration of it, potentially, is saying, all right, well, I'm going to lean into a youth build, but build it youth with high valued assets. And I don't think that it is truly a quote unquote productive struggle of building through rookies, but building through the high valued youth assets. I think that's maybe the next iteration of this truly productive struggle that used to be in the old days of just saying, hey, let's build through youth. 3 years from now, we'll have a monster dynasty team. That's dead and gone. That literally does not exist in the current landscape anymore, unless you are in a crazy league, honestly, that does not really value a lot of things that the current everyday dynasty market does. But I think there's an iteration of it that can exist.
So I guess thinking about that, and again, we can kind of wrap out on this, but if that's how you do, let's say you corner the market on young guys, right? Like you get four, even let's say you add a DJ Moore, like you get some really good core wide receivers, because that's all the rage right now. But you have the Amon-Ras and the Pukas and the AJ Browns, but you're kind of weak everywhere else. Is that where you continuously like try to build through the draft at that point, or are you looking to tear off of some of those players? Because I feel like at some point with that, you have to sacrifice your core, right? Like you kind of have to sacrifice your core in a way to build up those other areas. And like that's where it just worries me. It just worries me, right? Like I don't know.
It depends on how much value you can. I think it depends on how much value you can flip. I think quarterback you can definitely replace through a backup quarterback market. True. And then, I mean, I'm in a actual mock right now, the one that we were talking about earlier, where I've picked Patrick Mahomes at the 102, and we're in the ninth round, and I haven't picked another quarterback. You know what's still on the board right now on quarterback? Aaron Rodgers, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, Derek Carr, Michael Penix, Sam Howell, Kenny Pickett, Bo Nix, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew, Jarrett Stidham, Jacoby Brissett, there's about 10 potential starting quarterbacks that are still available right now. And so if you, and that's just in a startup, that's not even within a trade market.
Yep.
So I think you can easily backfill the quarterback market. Now you also have to build out a roster construction that would backfill a running back market as well, if you really did go that way, but still you're going to have other picks through the 7th through 9th rounds. You're going to have other thing. And if you don't, you have future first round picks. So I really do think that you could potentially do it that way, but you'd still be relying on a lot of variance to hit your way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, the more I look at it, especially looking at snake boards, being able to take Patrick Mahomes and an AJ Brown, maybe you can get take a shot on Malik Nabers early. It's a gamble, but you take a shot and you can still get a Pittman and a Rashee Rice or T. Higgins. Like, you still have some good young names there. Again, you're building purely through wide receiver at this point. Again, this is no trades. So just kind of looking down the list, there's definitely some names you could you can have some fun with on this. It's got me thinking.
For sure. That's all that we do here is just try to figure out these ways to, especially as our one way that we have been building for the last 4 years is dying out. There's got to be a zig to the zag, right? There's got to be. Now, it probably isn't the unproductive struggle way that we've been talking through tonight, at least in the form that we've been trying to steer away from. But it might be a version of this. It might be a version of what we've been talking about tonight of, hey, build around a core, take some picks, take some future value, and really try to build up a core to build through year two and try to win it in year two instead of doing this win now build that we've been so accustomed to doing.
Yeah, there's no specific nailed down correct way to do this for the productive struggle, an actual productive struggle, but there's absolutely wrong ways to do it. I think that's the one thing we wanted to hone in on, is there is core wrong ways to do this, and we want to help you avoid that and look at alternatives in order to build in this way, so it is an actual 1 to 2 year contender transformation. So always fun chopping it up, chatting it out here. Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap out?
Absolutely not. Other than that, just use that promo code DDD on Underdog. Make sure you get yourself in to that draft stream that I will be on for an ungodly amount of time, I fully assume. Get that draft guide, get your percentage bonus, get all the other things that come with it, and make sure that you tap in to Underdog Fantasy with DDD.
Yep, absolutely do that. You get the draft guide that's coming out, so stay tuned for more information on that. Again, patreon.com/allgas. Get yourself in that Heisman tier so you can have conversations like this where we just kind of talk out different strategies, have some fun voice chat conversations with Scott, Ray, us, all the content creators that are on the DD network, and then also be in the Destination 5 tier as well, because there's constant AMAs, specific Patreon-only content that you have to be in there for, and that's really where you're going to transform your Dynasty game. This is the time to do it. It's rookie season. It's the draft is coming up here. We got rookie drafts coming right around the corner, and it's startup season. So this is a fun time of year for Dynasty and for fantasy football. So yes, tap in, check us out, and thank you so much for joining us here at the Overreaction Podcast.